This is Tall Tales time. Legends of long ago, stories from the day before yesterday. Settle back in your chair and listen as we spin for you Tall Tales. Tonight, the story of a church and of the people who made it the center of their lives. We call it Bound for the Promised Land.
On Jordan's stormy banks I stand, and cast a wishful eye to Canaan's fair and happy land, where my possessions lie. I am bound for the promised land.
The year was 1805. The travelers from South Carolina were bound for the new Louisiana Territory. But when they came to Middle Tennessee, they stopped.
This is a far enough land. Why go further? The fields appear well watered. The people are friendly, and there aren't many of them. I vote to stay here. What say? Do you agree?
The travelers stayed on, and so began the history in Tennessee of Zion Community, a village with roots deep in past history, a people whose sense of unity was so strong that it divided their world into two parts, the men and women of Zion and the outsiders.
The young shall have instruction in the Westminster Confession and the Shorter Catechism. There will be no shaving, no chopping of wood, no cooking except the drawing of coffee, no dinners, and no visiting except of the sick on our holy Sabbath. Our discipline is the discipline of our church, administered by the elders and the minister.
In the year 1807, they found the land of their choice, the rolling green countryside of Murray County. What happened on the long journey, and in the years after, was set down in the Zion Church records by a member who signed himself simply Old Chronicler.
Now let us try to trace the divine hand in these things. In South Carolina's unhealthy climate, our children sickened and died. The good farmland was exhausted. Our church congregation had split asunder over the discipline of the Church of Scotland. The faith of our fathers, the faith our forebears brought with them when they sailed from North Ireland in 1734. As these things happened, the conviction grew within us that the time had come for us to move on, move westward where the land was green and rich.
We could not have reckoned the future without the Dominie to guide us, the Reverend James Stevenson, our minister. He came from Pennsylvania into the Waxhaw country of the Carolinas, and he knew Latin and Greek. I've got it in my mind that this young lawyer, Andrew Jackson, was one of his pupils in the Waxhaw school. Until the Revolution, when the Reverend Stevenson picked up a musket and went off to fight the British with General Sumter. They do say that some terrible, strange, and wonderful things happened to our minister in the war. A bullet struck the breech of his gun, broke it off and glanced sideways, and killed the man next to him. And another time, a night when he was too sick to serve as sentry, the man who took his place was shot dead at his spot. And so the Reverend Stevenson came back to us.
What wondrous love is this? Oh, my soul, oh, my soul. What wondrous love is this, O my soul? What wondrous love is this that calls the Lord of bliss?
In Tennessee, we turn to the vast tract of 25,000 acres granted to General Nathaniel Greene by the state of North Carolina. We sent a messenger to the general's heirs.
It was no mean proposition that the men of Zion put before the Greene family. 8 square miles of land, more than 5,000 acres, and a purchase price set at $15,360.
I've told the story to my children and to my grandchildren, and it's still like it happened only yesterday. I can still see the silver coins in neat stacks, shining on a linen cloth I myself wove back in the Waxhaws country. That's how we bought the land. Each man counted out as much silver as he wanted land, at a price of $3 an acre, wrapped the money in a cloth and brought it to the two messengers chosen to ride to General Greene's descendants. Then the pair of them rode off, with more than $15,000 in their saddlebags. And how did they protect such a sum? In the oddest way you could think of. Whenever they stopped overnight, they tossed the saddlebags on the porch of the shelter and went within, as if there was no more than corn for the journey in those sacks. Inside, they bemused the company with fiddle-playing and joking and stories of adventure, and so never once did a stranger's hand touch the saddlebag.
Near the center of the land we bought, we built a church of logs with a fireplace across one end of it to warm us on winter mornings.
The women and little children sat nearest the fire.
The old men were honored with seats near the wall where they could lean back against the logs. The young men and young ladies sat on benches of split logs in front of the old men.
And in the center, under the eyes of all others in the congregation, sat the boys of the unruly, restless age.
And that was our first church, to be followed soon by a larger meeting house of brick with brick floors and wings on either side for the slaves who were admitted to full membership in the church.
Discipline within the church was strict, but justice was tempered with mercy, and sometimes with humor.
I'm put in mind of my father, who was an elder of our church in South Carolina. He kept Sunday strictly, but it was hard for him to watch the indigo spoil in the vats, because the tanks could not be drained on the Sabbath.
The blue dye being his chief crop, the source of most of his income.
Indeed it was, and one day's delay might destroy the work of a whole season. We were on our way to church service one Sunday morning, when my father saw that the indigo in the vats was rich and ripe for draining. As he passed by, my father's foot struck the peg that held the indigo fluid dammed up in the vats. The peg fell out, and the indigo began dripping into the casks below. He was called before the other elders of the church, and he waited with dismay for their verdict.
This session by the elders of Williamburg Church has duly considered the case of the members' indigo vats, and the session has come to this conclusion. Accidents will happen, and men cannot be held too strictly accountable for them.
When I was sinking down, sinking down, sinking down, when I was sinking down, when I was sinking down beneath God's righteous frown.
The church house served as a schoolroom during the week. The echoes of Sunday's Calvinistic hymn tunes retreated before the sound of young voices reciting from the Latin grammar. The fame of the school at Sion Church spread and attracted boys from outside the community.
You're not one of our Sion lads, are ye? So what might your name be, young man?
The 18-year-old youth, standing before Schoolmaster Henderson, fixed him with a steady, commanding eye and answered, James Knox Polk, sir. And so did a future president of the United States take his place among the students in the Sion schoolhouse.
The instructions to the schoolmaster were very explicit. No whipping of the students. And so every man who taught at Sion Church School kept a list of those who misbehaved. Then once a week turned over that list to Uncle Sam Frierson on his regular visit to the schoolroom. He would read the names out, each boy standing as his name was called. And then the culprits would follow Uncle Sam Frierson down the spring, beyond the meeting house, and there listen as the old man talked over their sins with them. When he deemed it necessary, he applied the birch. And when all else seems to have failed, he prayed over them long and loud. And this was the thing the transgressors dreaded more than any whipping.
As the young people grew up, the Zion community lost some of its isolation.
In the early days, we shipped corn and pork and hides to New Orleans and walked back across the cane breaks over the Natchez Trace. As the years passed, however, we planted more of our land to cotton, and some of our native sons made their way to Memphis and even down to New Orleans, where they acted as brokers for the crop at home.
There were others who left the Zion community to try their luck elsewhere, the sons and daughters of the Negroes who worked the cotton fields. And in a world growing all the time more complex and tense, those who had left sometimes wished to return, when it was all too late to recapture the quiet simplicity of earlier days.
Dear Father, the letter began. At 4 o'clock this morning, Uncle John's man Vincent paid the debt of nature, and he is now among the departed spirits. He was anxious to return to his friends in Zion, but he could not travel. And so he died in the house of Billy, a man you once owned. He will be decently buried here in Memphis.
Soon one morning, death come a-creeping in my room. Soon one morning, death come a-creeping in my room. Soon one morning, death come a-creeping in my room. Oh, my Lord, oh, my Lord, what shall I do?
Stern, God-fearing, even perhaps harsh, the men and women of Zion community were all these things and more. Earnest, sincere, self-disciplined, and proud of the land they loved. They built a home for themselves in the wilderness and called it Zion.
I am bound for the promised land. I'm bound for the promised land. Oh, who will come and go with me? I am bound for the promised land.
You've been listening to Tall Tales, a retelling of famous Tennessee legends. Tonight you heard the story of the men who built Zion Community in the wilderness of Middle Tennessee 150 years ago. Tall Tales is written by Bill Woolsey and comes to you every Tuesday evening at this same time. In tonight's story, you heard Henry Sullivan, Becky Rice Lunn, and Bob Goldman. The ballad singer was George Grice. In cooperation with the Tennessee State Library, Tall Tales is making available to its listeners a reproduction of an old Indian map, the oldest map of Tennessee in existence. Printed on parchment-like paper suitable for framing, this Tall Tales map will be of interest to young and old alike. For your copy, send only your name and address to Tall Tales, WSM, Nashville, Tennessee. There is no charge whatever. Send your name and address to Tall Tales, WSM, Nashville, Tennessee, and receive your copy of this old Indian map of Tennessee, the oldest one in existence. That address again, Tall Tales, WSM, Nashville, Tennessee. Tall Tales, produced by Marjorie Cooney, is a presentation of the Department of Special Program Service and comes to you from WSM.